Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah, outspokenly conservative and unashamedly Christian. This is Hannah Miller, informed and unafraid. And I'm going to take this segment really quick. We teased this story earlier, and this is coming out of York, Rock Hill, actually, South Carolina. And that was that on Wednesday, a former NFL player, Philip Adams, went into the home of Dr. Robert Leslie, fatally shooting the physician along with his wife, two of their grandchildren, and an HVAC technician who is working at the couple's home. Another repairman was also shot in the attack and is currently hospitalized in critical condition. Now, this was late yesterday. I don't know what the update is on the other repairman as of this morning. Adams was 32 and then took his own life as law enforcement sought to coax him out of his father's home during a standoff the next day, authorities said. And the York County Sheriff, Kevin Tolson, told the news at a conference on Thursday yesterday that there's nothing right now that makes sense to us. They have not been able to discover a motive, although there is some suspicion that Adams, as a patient of Dr. Robert Leslie, wanted some medication and Leslie refused to prescribe it. And so there's that suspicion that had happened and that Adams was angry with Dr. Leslie over that. But nothing has been confirmed at this point. And there's been a lot of conflict over maybe what the possible motivation could be, because there doesn't appear to be a whole lot of evidence kind of coming to the forefront.
But it's been suggested too that the guy that committed this terrible crime, mm-hmm, could have had brain damage from years of playing in the NFL, that they're talking about the possibility of his mental state, that he was, mm-hmm, mentally unbalanced. I think I saw something that said, you know, that could have been a contributing factor. But the fact is, they just don't.
He played six seasons in the NFL.
Right.
Well,
which means he played in college, which means, mm-hmm, he played in high school. He probably played in peewee or midget, mm-hmm, football,
right,
or whatever they,
right,
call it.
He last played in the NFL with the Atlanta Falcons in 2015. He was a seventh round pick of the San Francisco 49ers in 2010. He then played for the New England Patriots, Seattle Seahawks, Oakland Raiders, and New York Jets. But the thing that's just amazing was a statement that was put out by the family, the Leslie family, that I was just reading through. And the four Leslie siblings wrote this statement and said, "On behalf of the Leslie, Alexander, and Kulbach clans, we would like to address the outpouring of heartbreak, shock, grief, and support from our family, friends, and community. We are truly in the midst of the unimaginable. The losses we are suffering cannot be uttered at this time. While we know there are no answers that will satisfy the question why, we are sure of one thing. We do not grieve as those without hope. Our hope is found in the promise of Jesus Christ, and we are enveloped by peace that surpasses all understanding. To that end, our hearts are bent toward forgiveness and peace, toward love and connectedness, toward celebration and unity. We honor all of those involved in this story with prayers and compassion, specifically for the Shook family, the Lewis family, and the Adams family. As Robert Leslie would say, when peace like a river attendeth my way, when sorrows like sea billows roll, it is well with my soul." And then it goes on, if you'd like to do something for the family, they are asking people to help stock some pantries and libraries in the area.
Yeah, but see, apparently this guy was a really good, I mean.
Yeah, his father was, they were stunned. His family was stunned. They,
right,
had no idea.
It's not like somebody that was involved in some kind of seedy activity, mm-hmm, got connected with the wrong people. I mean, this was a pillar of the community, somebody that was well-respected and loved and looked up to for years in that, mm-hmm, community. And, you know, loss of life is terrible under, you know, all circumstances. But certainly when you've got a person who is just completely innocent of anything other than being a great asset to the community, and something like this happens, it's a terrible tragedy. And I hope they can, getting to the bottom of these things is more than, it is about giving some sense of justice or closure to, mm-hmm, the family, but it's also about trying to figure out how we keep things like this from happening,
yeah,
in the future.
What went wrong so that we could step in, or, you know, the community can see the signs of things like this happening? Because that was the other side of it, was that Adam's family, they had no idea that, I mean, this was, they were totally taken by surprise as well. There seems to be no evidence that any of them can bring forward that this was going to happen, that there were things going on in Adam's life that would indicate that he was becoming violent or aggressive. And so it's, yeah, I think you're so right. It's more than just wanting to get the facts of the case so that justice can be served, but it's a, why did this happen and what can we do in the future to help protect folks from, you know, either being victims of this or being victimizers in this kind of situation.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I was out with my family yesterday. I took the day off because I've had a lot of family in town this week. So we'd gone to the train. They've got this place in Taylor's that's model trains, and it's really cool, particularly the guys.
Yeah.
Now we got the girls out, you know, started doing some other stuff with them, but the guys were just trains. You know, they love trains. But this story, like my watch vibrated and gave me the headline, and then I picked up my phone and looked at it, and I was just, I mean, I had that, it's a terrible feeling, even though I didn't know these people, I'd never heard, when I actually heard prominent doctor, I mean, the headline was, you know, and was just prominent doctor, it didn't
South
give me
Carolina
a
doctor.
South Carolina doctor, and I'm going, oh my gosh, you know, and it was not your dad, so thankfully, but this family, when I read the story, I got that feeling like you would have if it was somebody you did know. Because after reading the description, you felt like, well, I know people. I've got people in my world, in my life that are like this. And so it leads you to that point where how can we stop this kind of thing? And it's not gun control. I mean, please, it's not the people who commit crimes like this are, once they decide that this is what they're going to do, finding a weapon to carry it out is the least of their concerns. Mm-hmm. I mean, and would be if all handguns were outlawed. I mean, it's not going to be difficult for them to be able to find a weapon to commit this kind of crime. So that's not the solution. But there's we need to explore, give the family closure, and help our communities, our culture, to understand this in a way that maybe we can give information, advice that can help prevent this from happening again. Because right now, honestly, this family just needs prayer. It's been a terrible ordeal. I can't imagine it. And we want to talk about it a few minutes just to make you aware so that maybe you could be in prayer for them as well. I don't think I told you, we didn't tell you all the stuff at the beginning of the second hour of who we are and what we do and all that.
I did my part, but you didn't do your part.
I didn't do my part. That's true. Because I was arguing with Spotify. I'll just tell you, when you lose a credit card and you have to cancel it and then you replace it, and you've got all these subscriptions that are connected to that credit card.
It's the worst.
They start canceling you. They just, and you know, and they just go, okay, you've got 30 seconds to change your, and I'm like, what? And so then they, well, anyway, Hannah was trying to cover for me while I was in a conversation with someone from Spotify who has no direct contact information. You have to chat with them online. And if you've ever done that, you know what that's like. I'd rather have my teeth drilled without Novocaine. Okay. Welcome to the program, South Carolina Senator Josh Kimbrell. Good morning, sir.
Well, if you want to know what getting your teeth drilled without Novocaine feels like, sit through a six-hour debate of the South Carolina Senate.
Somehow I knew you were going to have a corollary that was going to be a little bit more serious. Tell us about this past week. What kind of debates have you been involved in?
Well, I'll tell you the least consequential one first, and you know, realizing that I'm on a Christian talk radio station, we had a six-hour debate yesterday that culminated with about 3 hours talking about a Gallo wine targeted tax incentives bill about tasting rooms.
Right.
And I will tell you, you know, I'll go ahead and ask for forgiveness ahead of time, but every single senator was wanting a wine tasting room by the time that was over. So we got through it, and trying to get some jobs in York County, but really the big issues are still out there. So many things we're still worried about, you and I and Hannah and Gary – are still floating around out there between the two chambers, and I think the coming week will be particularly consequential on that front. We're going to be trying to take up, I'm sure, the hate crimes bill, which we'll talk about that in a minute. We've also got to work really hard on getting a pro-Second Amendment bill out of the Senate. The House has done their job on both, and so now we've got to do our job in the Senate, and it's just going to be a crazy week next week since we're getting ready to go into the budget season as well. So certainly April is the high water mark of the Senate schedule for now.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about the hate crimes bill, because it did pass the House. It was an overwhelming vote, and there's been some controversy erupt over that. And because I've got family in town this week, I would have been in Columbia on Wednesday and yesterday as well, probably. And because of trying to take a little time off to be with them while they're here, I haven't been able to do that. But I have been following and talking to the other One Message Group members down in Columbia. And Vic Dabney has come under attack in the House for making statements that he's being accused of being just racist on his Facebook page. And did anything happen with any suggestion about censoring, or has that kind of blown over? Do you know what the status of that is in the House? Because it was over the hate crimes bill.
I can't specifically speak to Representative Vic Dabney's situation or what was or was not said. I can just say that the feeling around the State House is that there was probably a trade-off, you know, frankly. I don't mean this in a critical way. Just probably a trade-off that we got heartbeat quickly without too much Democratic opposition, because a Democratic caucus wanted this bill. And that's one of the reasons it may have moved so quickly through the House. Now, I can't say for sure that's the case. That's what everybody tends to be under that impression. That's the impression I'm under. Now it falls on the Senate to make sure that we don't let a hate crimes bill come out of our chamber that's going to have a chilling effect on free speech, particularly free speech of people of faith and people who want to express their political and or religious beliefs that may have to do with family or traditional values of marriage and human sexuality. And that's where my concern has been all along, and I've made that clear with you, with other talk radio programs with which I have spoken, with the media. You know, my goal here is not to, I'm not, if we were talking about a hate crimes bill that prevents, you know, I had to go to this example, but let's just be blunt, that prevents something like lynching or lynch mobs against people based on race or gender, I could get behind that. That's not what this is. This is all about social an agenda, really, when it comes to the LGBT issues and trying to force folks into a conformity position on gender identity and sexual orientation. That is a very dangerous precedent, and it's being rushed through so quickly because it's done under the guise of a hate crimes bill. So if you're not for it, then you get exactly what Matt Dabney got, which is you're called a racist, when really this bill doesn't have anything to do with race, and that's not why it's being pushed so aggressively by left-wing interest groups. And frankly, that's not why I oppose it. I oppose it because of the SOGI language regarding gender identity and the idea of 36 genders and shutting down churches and Christian schools because they don't agree with the LGBT agenda. And that's what it comes down to, Tony, and that's what I'm worried about.
Yeah. Well, and I share your concerns about that. I mean, a lot of the elements of this bill that were bad were, as it emerged from the House, have been taken out. So the bill was improved through the committee process in the House, through subcommittee and judiciary. But one of the things that emerged, that there were kind of three things that a lot of us had concerns about: civil penalties that were not linked to the criminal code that would allow people to sue each other if even for something as that rises to the level of emotional distress, if they felt emotional distress at something someone did or said toward them that caused that. That was taken out. We were also concerned that hate crimes was connected to stalking and harassment because there are speech elements in those two criminal codes in South Carolina, and that was going to open the door for hate speech to be brought to the table. So that was taken out. But the third thing was we were concerned that non-immutable characteristics were going to be included in the protected classes. What we've said from the beginning, agreeing with you, that immutable characteristics should be protected from bigotry, prejudice, but things that are not immutable, things that, for example, transgender, the idea that you can change gender just by making an announcement, is certainly not an is going against immutability. And you start protecting that in one class, and it opens up the door for a lot of bad things to happen for people who may disagree with the idea of transgender or sexual orientation. What happens to them if that becomes a hate crime to that you can commit a hate crime against those categories? That if that language was not in there, I would have absolutely no problem with the bill.
Well, that's where I am. And one of the things I did is I have a little spreadsheet that has every state in the country that has a hate crimes bill, because we're constantly reminded by the Chamber of Commerce and others that, that every state in the union almost has this. We're down to being one of the last three that doesn't. We're stuck in the sticks or something. And here's the reality they're not telling you. The vast majority of states that have these hate crime laws, including Alabama and I think Mississippi even, I know Alabama, it doesn't include gender identity and sexual orientation. Most of the states, particularly conservative states, that have a hate crimes bill do not include sexual orientation and gender identity in those prohibited bases.
Right.
And but the one here does, the one here that the Chamber of Commerce is pushing does. And I'll tell you what, here's Senator Kimball's position. I've said this before, I'll repeat it again. I'll offer an amendment when it comes to the floor. When the hate crimes bill comes to the Senate, I'll offer an amendment removing gender identity, sexual orientation, and making it immutable characteristics only. If my amendment is adopted, I will vote for the bill. If my amendment is tabled, I will vote against this bill, and I will object to this bill, and I will do everything I can to kill the bill. Because it is a terrible precedent to punish people for their beliefs on human sexuality and gender identity. And frankly, it has a chilling effect on free speech. And just, let's just back up one big step here about the notion of hate crimes anyways. Even though, like I just said, I'll vote for it if we can take out the SOGI language regarding gender identity, sexual orientation. But either way, the notion of a hate crimes bill is a legally flawed theory anyways, because the standard of proof, the burden of proof, in a criminal court case is beyond a reasonable doubt. That's the evidentiary standard. It's pretty hard to reach beyond a reasonable doubt, even on physical evidence, proving something that actually occurred or events that occurred, an act that occurred. But how do you prove beyond a reasonable doubt the state of mind? We're not talking about just punishing people here. We're talking about punishing them more severely based on what our interpretation as a society is as to what their state of mind was while they committed a crime. I don't know how you ever get beyond the reasonable doubt on an evidentiary standard proving state of mind, because that is speculative, and typically speculative testimony is tossed from a criminal court proceeding. So the whole idea is legally flawed, but particularly on the basis of changing the prohibited bases of immutable characteristics, including gender identity, sexual orientation.
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. All right. Well, there's some other bills out there that for one, I understand, is in committee in the Senate. It's already passed the House, and it has to do with protecting houses of worship during the time of an emergency or a pandemic. In other words, it protects those houses of worship from future administrations who may not be as gracious to houses of worship as Governor McMaster has been during the pandemic. What is the future of that bill? Is that going to get through the Senate? We kind of thought that was an easy one to pass, but it seems to be held up in a subcommittee.
I don't think we have a problem in the Senate with the Religion is Essential Act. I don't think that's the problem. I think one of the things I hope folks understand, and by no means am I defending that there are things we need to move faster on, but one thing I'll tell you, having been around politics for a while, even before serving in the Senate, as I know, Tony, you've been around politics for a while and worked with the legislature, this is probably the most efficient Senate we've ever seen. We've never moved this fast on this many issues. It just doesn't happen. So I'm encouraged by the rapid pace of things. Nevertheless, this year there were nearly 1,000 bills pre-filed or filed during this session. So I don't think it's an issue that nobody wants that bill. There's so many things trying to work through the system that it's just not come up on the floor yet. It's the first year of a two-year session. I'm confident we're going to pass Religion is Essential. I don't know of anybody in the chamber who has a problem with it. I mean, you may get some objection from the Democrats, but in terms of the committees and even Chairman Rankin of Judiciary, I don't foresee any opposition to putting Religion is Essential on the floor. It could happen this year. It's already crossed over. It could happen. But if not, I think we'll take it up early next year and it'll pass.
Okay. All right. A couple other things real quick. Medical marijuana, did it pass?
It's not been voted on. Medical marijuana is under objection right now. My friend and colleague Greg Hembree, former prosecutor, the chairman of the Education Committee, senator from Myrtle Beach, he is objecting to the bill as it stands right now. Now, there is some discussion that there may be a debate on medical marijuana in the Senate as early as Tuesday, but I don't think it's going to, with an objection, and I've spoken to Senator Hembree, I've spoken to numerous other members of the Senate, and a lot of folks, and myself included, don't support this bill, and there's a lot of folks objecting to the bill. Right now, Hembree's kind of holding it up with the objection, but I support Greg in doing that, or Senator Hembree in doing that. But, you know, you'd have to have 26 votes to get cloture. You'd have to have special order to pass medical marijuana with an objection. And there's not 26 votes right now to end debate and vote. So we're too close to the end of the session. I don't think medical marijuana gets an up or down vote this year. But you got to be vigilant. It very well could next year. And we've got to see what happens. I mean, Senator Tom Davis is a friend of mine. And Senator Davis done a great job on a whole range of issues. This is a passion of his, and I understand that. I have disagreements with this bill. There's got to be more work done to make sure we're not opening up a gateway to recreational legalization, which I feel like that's what this does.
Yes.
And right now, I just don't think there's enough votes to overcome a filibuster in the Senate, and I don't think it gets a vote this year.
Well, and it's already missed crossover. Crossover was yesterday, the crossover deadline. So even if, I mean, it shouldn't be considered because of that, right? I mean, a bill is supposed to pass one or the other chambers by yesterday. And this particular bill hasn't passed in the House. I don't think they've passed a medical marijuana bill, right? So this should keep that from being an issue for the rest of the session.
Crossover is a little bit of a fallacy. There is a such thing as crossover. We are past the deadline. Well, we will be on Sunday, but the legislature is adjourned until Tuesday. So, yeah, we're past the deadline. But here's the deal. With crossover, you can still pass a bill this year, but it's a higher threshold. So hypothetically, the Senate were to pass this bill. If two-thirds of the House agree to take it up, then it could still pass this year. But two-thirds of the House is not going to vote to take it up, I don't think. And I don't even think 26 votes in the Senate are going to vote to take it up. So, I think it's safe bet that's not going to go anywhere this year.
Okay. On the COVID relief, the bill to make sure that businesses, churches, nonprofits, so forth, have some protection from lawsuits. What is the status of that bill?
To be honest with you, I'd have to check what's happening in the House. We passed that bill 2 months ago in the Senate. That's been out of our chamber for quite a long time. We passed it, I think, unanimously or almost unanimously.
Right.
And so the Senate acted quickly. I don't know. The House, I was under the impression the House was going to take it up fairly quickly, but I haven't heard anything. So I, honestly, Tony, I can only speak to what the Senate did. The Senate passed it.
Right.
I haven't heard a final decision what the House has decided to do yet.
Yeah. I'll have to check on that, see if it's on the contested calendar, if it's likely to come up before the end of the session. Well, Senator, thank you for your time this morning. Do you have anything else that you want to bring us up to speed on before we let you go? Because you've given us a lot of time this morning.
Well, I would ask that we spend just a minute on guns, if you will. I know you're probably up against a break. Do we need to hold, or do you want to talk about guns?
Nope. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about, I know that open carry is the bill that is likely to get passed, that constitutional carry is not in a position, I think this is correct, to get through this session, but open carry has a shot, so to speak.
Yeah, I think that's right. Open carry with a permit is almost certainly coming up on the floor. I was in a meeting yesterday with about 10 or 12 senators. All of us are pushing for this. We want a vote on this, and we want open carry with a permit to be brought to the floor. Now, here's the fun thing about the Senate, a little different than the House in terms of rules, adding amendments and things of that nature. What we're trying to do is get an amendment. I know of one senator. I won't spell the guy out right now. Let's see what happens with it. But I know one senator who's thinking of adding a constitutional carry amendment to open carry, and we'll see if we have the votes. I personally don't think there's 26 votes to add that in. I don't think that the amendment will pass. I'll vote for it. We'll go ahead and tell you this. I will vote for a constitutional carry amendment to the open carry bill in the Senate. Don't think the votes are there to add it as an amendment. And then I will vote for final passage of open carry with a permit, because in my view, getting 80% of what you want is better than getting nothing. And I'd rather get something than nothing this year. I'll try my best to support the constitutional carry amendment. If we can't get that, I'm certainly going to vote for open carry with a permit. I am not voting against that and make the perfect the enemy of the good.
Right.
We've got to get something, and I think it's a strong symbol to send that we're going to stand up for the Second Amendment. in South Carolina at a time that the national administration seems hell-bent on restricting gun rights.
Well, and let me encourage you about something about that. Just limit the exceptions to open carry if possible. You know, that's the thing about a permit in South Carolina. You know, I'm a concealed weapons permit holder, but there are so many limitations. You know, well, you can carry concealed unless you're going into the hospital. You can carry concealed unless you're driving onto school grounds. You can carry concealed unless you're, and it goes on and on. A business can put a placard up with a certain size that says, no, you can't carry in here, which I get private businesses. They get to operate their business the way they want to, and I'm not opposed to that. But I know in the open carry bill, there are exceptions. And if we're going to open carry, my suggestion would be let's open carry with as few exceptions as possible.
I agree with you on that. Here's the dilemma we're going to have. I agree. I mean, look, I think there's too many restrictions on CWPs. If I had my way, we would lift all these gun-free zones, particularly at schools and theaters and all that, because that's where a lot of unfortunate things happen.
Right.
So I'd like to eliminate as many of those gun-free zones as possible. Here's the only hiccup we're going to have if we go doing that right now. Even the constitutional carry amendment, if it does pass, and I don't think it will, would require the bill to go back to the House. If we make a lot of changes to open carry with a permit as it has come over from the House, it has to go back to the House, which means nothing happens this year because the House doesn't have time to take it back up. We're in the budget now. So really, the clock is against us.
Yeah.
If we want to get something this year, the cleanest thing for us to do in the Senate is adopt open carry with a permit as it is in the House without any changes, because if we change it a lot, then we're not getting anywhere this year.
Right.
But I understand the argument. I mean, look, my view is, and it's a really careful balancing act, is do we go make the bill better and risk not getting anything this year and hope we do better next year? Or do we pass something this year to at least make a step forward and then next year go add amendments to it or add additional legislation to strengthen it? And I guess we're just going to have to see what happens in the Senate with the vote count.
Right. Senator, thanks. By the way, I got a text message from Representative John McCravey. I knew he listens to the program. He said, I passed the Senate COVID bill through my subcommittee last week. Since it's a Senate bill, we can pass it this year. So sounds like that's got a good shot of coming up in the House and getting passed. And I think that's going to make a lot of business owners and a lot of churches and a lot of nonprofits, a lot of people in South Carolina happy if that can be the case.
Well, and tell Representative McCravey that I said thank you.
Oh, absolutely. You bet. Well, God bless you, brother. Thanks for spending so much time with us. And we look forward to seeing you next week.
Always good to be here, Tony. Thank you.
All right. We're glad to welcome Representative John McCravey to the show today. He's the leader of the Family Caucus in the House. And, of course, he gets his news, information, and updates from Christian Worldview with Tony and Hannah. So, therefore, he was listening to our conversation with Josh, and he's going to call in, straighten us out here. So we've had Senator Graham, we've had Senator Kimbrell, and now we need House Leader John, or Family Caucus Leader John McCravey, to kind of straighten it all out. Is that a good introduction? Welcome in.
That's a fantastic introduction. And I hope y'all can put up with one more politician today.
Absolutely. We appreciate you calling in. So I guess you were calling to talk a little bit about the COVID relief bill since you sent me a text message about it, that we've at least got a good chance of getting it through the House.
Yes, sir. We took that up in my subcommittee, and we heard from a lot of different entities on it. It's a very important bill. And we passed that through my sub, and it should be coming up next week or the following week at least in full judiciary and go on to the floor. I think it's a very popular bill. I think that, you know, a lot of people are looking for protection, you know, because frankly, I run a small business myself, and you know, we're worried about, you know, we don't want to be attacked by lawsuits that, you know, from some strange source claiming that they got COVID, and you know, church is the same way. So we just need to protect our people and protect small businesses and churches with this bill.
Right. I had a friend of mine send me a text this week, John, and just you know, he was not in a antagonistic way in any way, but just he had some questions. He said to me, I believe the bill is well intentioned, but the unintended consequences could be not good for business and churches. It could leave open the realistic possibility of churches and other entities being targeted via this legislation. Have you heard any of that? Was that brought up in the subcommittee hearing?
It was not. And I'm certainly open to anybody who wants to give me input on that. We saw it, you know, there were a couple of things that were discussed. One was, can a healthcare provider who commits complete malpractice aside from treating a COVID patient, can they still be held accountable? And the answer is yes. This bill did not prevent, you know, somebody that's a victim of malpractice or anything like that from bringing an action. But, you know, I did not hear that, and certainly I'm open to listening to any tweaks. You know, if we need to amend it, we'll be happy to do so if we need to.
Right. Yeah, I was, and I didn't know if that had come up. That's just something that he mentioned. On the hate crimes bill, I know it passed the House, and you know, Josh and I talked about our concerns as it goes forward in the Senate. And I wanted to see, is there anything you can tell us about the controversy over Representative Dabney? Is that something that's, as the news media says, does that have legs? Is that going to keep going forward? Or can you talk about it at this point?
Well, frankly, I have not heard any talk other than reading WIS or something like that. I've not heard any talk of censoring anybody. And frankly, you know, I read his Facebook post that he took down.
Right.
And, you know, I think if you read it in context, there was certainly nothing intended by that, by him, I don't believe. And he's a good man. I don't think he is. I've never heard him say anything out of the way or anything like that. So I think it's overblown, just like President Trump, when he would tweet something or say something and they take it out of context, they take one sentence out of context. I think it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, let me just say, I've read, somebody screenshotted the Facebook page before it was taken down and sent it to me. So I've read it. And there are some things that I think he could have said differently that would have been maybe not taken the wrong way. But I agree with you. Nothing that he said in that made me believe that he was intentionally trying to behave in a racist manner or say something that would demean anybody. He was just simply making a point that, you know, that a lot of the problems that we have in our culture, in our society, the blame for them seems to be misplaced in many, many instances. And I believe that was the overarching point that he was trying to make. So, this whole business of censuring people for things that they say, if you know the person, you know where they're coming from, you know, the cancel culture environment, I think, needs to stop all the way across the board, just simply because free speech is supposed to be something that we all commit to defending in this country.
That's correct. And like I said, you know, I've heard nothing in the House of Representatives about him, about any type of censure. And that might have been mentioned to the news by one House member, maybe a person who wanted that, but I certainly have heard nothing. There's been no move in my mind that I've heard of at all.
All right, going forward in the House, what do you see for the rest of the session, Representative McCravey? Is this going to be, obviously the budget's going to take up a lot of time because it always does after crossover, but do you see, you've already talked a little bit about the COVID bill coming up and probably getting voted on. Are there some other bills that you're looking at that you hope to see come up and get passed?
Yes, sir. We got the Save Women's Sports back out of my subcommittee again. You know, we had kind of a surprise voice vote tabling that bill a few weeks ago. And so Representative Trantham did a great job of refiling that bill, changed a little bit, refiled it, and we got it out of my subcommittee this week. So I look forward to that coming back up. You know, and like you said, we've got the COVID bill coming up. We may have, you know, there are some other possibilities. At this point, you know, most of what you bring up are things that either are Senate bills that can be passed back over, or they're not going to be finalized this year in the House. They'll be kind of carried over on the calendar until next year.
Because the House is pretty
that's kind of where we are.
Yeah, the House is kind of pretty much finished with the budget process. That's going to rest primarily, I think, in the Senate's hands, right, at this point?
It is, in a way. I think the House will have a hand in rewriting it. You know, the budget that was written by the House did not have the information we just got, that we're going to have a surplus, more money coming in than was expected on the recurring and non-recurring side, too. So that's going to necessitate looking at the whole budget again. I think the Senate is going to start doing that, and I think the House is going to participate in that as well. House has already started. They're about to start having hearings again in Ways and Means. So it's going to be like recreating the process.
Well, you know,
it's been an unusual year.
If y'all have got more money than you need, we'd be glad to help you and to take some of that back if you want to just, well, you know, pull a van up somewhere and start handing out cash. It doesn't work that way.
Right, right. Well, it's more than what's projected, let me put it that way. And they did a very, very conservative budget. Very few raises, very few expenditures that they wanted to make because we had to be conservative. But I think, you know, some things we'll be able to add back in that would normally be in there. So that's what Ways and Means is kind of signaling.
Well, we're looking forward to hearing more about Save Women's Sports. We hope that'll get through the full judiciary, make it to the floor, and maybe even get passed before the session's over. But it's good to know that it's back alive in the House after being tabled. John, thanks for spending some time with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And while I've got you, just thank you for being such a principled leader in South Carolina and the way you lead the Family Caucus and the things that make up your worldview. It's platformed in a Christian understanding of truth and of the world. And it's a great pleasure to work with you.
Well, thank you, Tony. And I can say the same thing about you. You know, you're a great resource. Whenever I see your face down there in Columbia, I'm always encouraged because I know that we have people with the right principles in South Carolina down there standing up for what's right. So thank you for all you do.
Yes, sir, brother. Same to you. Before we talk to Bill, let me give you a couple of things. First of all, you may be wondering, why are you not talking about gun control? Because President Biden came out with his gun control recommendations. I'm gonna tackle that on Monday. Let me just tell you, I want to get through the Derek Chauvin information today, and I knew there was going to be a lot. I knew I had the interview with Senator Graham. Knew I had the interview with Senator Kimbrell, and I want to spend some time on the Second Amendment and to talk about what Biden is trying to do to the Second Amendment and the likelihood of any of that happening, the executive orders that he's issuing. So anyway, we'll get into that full bore on Monday. Now, you may want to go today to the Daily Signal. This is not the kind of article that Hannah and I would sit here and talk about necessarily, because it's an in-depth look at how Georgia's voting law compares to 7 blue or purple states. So, in other words, all this brouhaha over Georgia and voting and the voting law, how does it compare to states that are considered to be progressive? Is it more or less restrictive? And I think you'll be surprised, but just go to Daily Signal. It's by Fred Lucas, and it's called How Georgia's Voting Law Compares to 7 Blue Purple States Laws. All right, Bill, thanks for calling.
Very good morning to you, Mrs. Miller. And to you, Dr. Beam. Dr. Beam, and I appreciate all this great information that you give to us of what's happening down at the State House. And your activism appears to me closely lobby support of your beliefs. It's very good for me. Dr. Beam, I would like to know, have there been any proposed legislation by any of the black legislators down there that has been bought through the Senate or through the House. What are they doing down there? Every time I hear you talk, you very rarely reference. One time you reference a black representative who were for the bill that was passed by that dealt with abortion. You said she. I just want to know, are they doing anything down there? I mean, what are they doing?
Well, I don't know because and here's the reason I don't know. When a bill comes up, I look at the text of the bill, and the only reason I look at the sponsors is to find out who to talk to about whether I oppose or support a bill. So I don't pay any attention to who, what color the person is that's putting forth legislation. So I don't have a way to gauge that or to judge it. There may be bills that have been passed or maybe in the hopper that is have been sponsored by African American or minority leaders, but I don't know because I haven't looked.
Well, and you're moving around there. I mean, have you had any communication? I mean, like I said, I appreciate you told us about the black female representative. And let me say now, it's not just race; it's a part of communities and cultures as we look at the diversity of the state. South Carolina is one of the highest black populated states in the country, percentage-wise. So that's why I'm asking, because I want to know, are they doing anything down there? I know they gave out some food that they got from the federal government to a church the other day. But, and matter of fact, they're coming in. I'll be there, God's will, on May the 3rd to the 6th. The South Carolina Baptist Missionary Education Convention is coming to the upstate. But I just want to know. I never hear you say anything about that other than that one person. If they're down there just getting a check, I just need to know. That was all.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I don't think anybody's just down there getting a check. I think they're all at work. I just don't. It's not in my wheelhouse to. I think in terms of bills, content, and who's involved in the bill, not in terms of did this come from this group or that group. I mean, as far as race is concerned, I guess I could do that. I just haven't done it. So anyway. Okay, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I mean, we just kind of...
No, I enjoyed hearing all that and getting updated by just along with everybody else.
Well, I look forward to seeing you on Tuesday.
Yep, I will be here.
And Monday, we'll talk about gun control. And until then, have a great weekend. This is my last Sunday at Brushy Creek. It's going to be bittersweet. I've loved every minute of being their interim, but they've got a wonderful new pastor. So we'll talk about that Monday, too.